There'll always be an England while there's a country lane. Yes, good morning, everybody. It is, of course, St. George's Day. Are we allowed to sing songs like that now? Who knows? I've no idea. Honestly, the world is going barking mad. I have no idea. Shakespeare's birthday, and also, I believe, Joe Browniski's wife's birthday. Joe, FTS member, good lad, and I do believe it's your wife's birthday, so happy birthday to your good lady. I am, the dog's moving in, I am being tested at the minute, people. The C word was nearly coming out today, as people are testing every single ounce of my resilience, I think, into what is... normal behaviour. The one word you can't use in this, your one word you cannot use in all this is normal. And I'm seeing intelligent people trying to have conversations, or I thought they were intelligent, and using the word normal as if this is just normal times. It's not normal times, is it? It's quite fucking clear that it's not normal times. I've said before that there's people who, with the greatest respect to them, old people who have lived through a war, which may be the only thing remotely close to what we are experiencing now. The last one of these was in 1917, when none of these fucking idiots were alive, and they're sitting there using the word normal. I think the one thing you can quite safely say with 100% fucking authority, it is not normal. So if you're using the word normal in a sentence, don't fucking interact with me in any way, state or fucking time. Go home, find a fucking wall, headbutt it about 22 times. After you've done that, run a big fucking deep bowl of water, fill it with ice cubes, stick your fucking head in it and hold it there for about another 10 seconds. Come back up, headbutt the wall a few times, step away from the wall, punch yourself in the face 32 times. Go out in the garage, find a baseball bat, golf club, something like that, and fucking whack yourself really hard. Come back in, head in the water again, couple of headbutts on the wall, and hopefully by then you'll realise this is not fucking normal, you absolute fucking cretin melts. If you're taking fucking any sense and looking at people going, well, normally, what the fucking hell's the matter with you? Normally we'd be doing this. Normally. Yeah, you absolute fucking dimwits. I can't take it seriously, honestly. I think people are doing it to wind me up, because you can't genuinely be that fucking stupid. And then you got the old orange one last night, desperately trying to get old Dr. Birx to say that the vaccine might not return. Desperately. He's going, it might not come back. It might not come back. I think he wants his statement of February of, miraculously, it will just disappear. One day it'll be a miracle. It'll just disappear. We'll wake up and it'll be gone. I think that is genuinely what he's hoping for, and hoping that it's before November. Right, people are going, why November? St. George's Day, get your flags out. Remember when that, who was it, the Labour politician, didn't want the English flags at the windows? Funny old people, aren't they? Right, book for you today. I'm going to give you a book. Oh, we've got the interview, of course. We've got the most important part. We have got Kevin Kelly's wife. Now, Kevin I met through Suxy. Lovely lad, Kevin. Known him just over a year, but an absolute diamond, what I'd call a diamond geezer from that part of East London, diamond geezer. But he's a West Ham fan. We make accountancies for that. But I spoke for a good half hour yesterday to his wife. Never really spoken to the spouse of anyone to do with punting. You know, anybody who's been involved with me, I've deal with punters and bettors pretty much every day, but I've never actually spoke to the spouse to get their view. So we had a good half hour chat just about all sorts of things, and her aims for him and her fears and this, that and the other. So we've got that coming up for you shortly. I've got a book for you. The book is, good book again, The Greatest Secret in the World by O.G. Mandino. And this is really, it's just about making a better you, I guess. A world of The tagline is a world of personal happiness and extraordinary achievement. My view on it is just about making, a better you, really. Unlocking yourself and making you, that's what I would say, a better you. Bringing out the best in your abilities and personality by sort of trying to enhance that side of you. So that is the book. It is The Greatest Secret in the World by OG Mandino. Get it, read it. Let's do some reading. I'll do the recipe, then I'll do Let Kelly Take Over, and then I'll do jokes, facts and stats at the end of the podcast. Right, we're gonna have a good old English recipe. This is absolutely lovely. I make this loads of times. Oh, excuse me, got a hoarse old throat this morning. Corona. It is an absolute beauty, this. It is, it's a Gordon Ramsay recipe from when, I don't know if he still does have his restaurant in Claridge's, I don't think he has, but this is the chicken pie that they served in Claridge's. Now, the first thing I'm going to have is the Northerners going, it's not a pie, because it is in effect a filling that you put a top on. It's not a pie case. You don't have to make a pastry case and put it in. It's literally you make a filling and then we put the pastry on top, and we're only going to use ready-made puff pastry, so it's not difficult at all. So the Northerners will be going, that's not a pie, as they were yesterday on Twitter, the old, it's tea, not dinner. No, it's not, it's dinner. Tea is a feckin' drink, and there is no such thing as a dinner lady. They are school lunch assistants. We all know that. Everybody knows it. School lunch assistants, that's what they're called. Right, for your pie, you need some boneless chicken breast, skinless, four of those, some baby onions or little shallots, 500ml of chicken stock, a bay leaf, some fresh thyme, the bacon lardons, again, smoked. I just buy the packs from Sainsbury's Finest Bacon Lardons, 100 grams of butter, some button mushrooms, 100ml of dry sherry, 200ml of double cream, two teaspoons of some fresh chopped tarragon, and a tablespoon of chopped parsley, flat leaf parsley, some ready-made puff pastry, an egg yolk, and some salt and pepper. So the first thing is to peel the onions. So put them in a jug of boiling water for about 30 seconds, then strain it out, and they'll peel a lot easier, and leave the roots on the bottom. Just cut them tight to the end of the onion or shallot, but leave the roots on the bottom. Once you've peeled them, bring the stock to the boil in a shallow sort of deep frying pan, 500ml of chicken stock, and pop the onions in there and cook for 5 minutes. Just leave them boiling away, simmering away. While they're doing that, cut the chicken up into sort of 1.5-2 centimetre chunks. Lift the onions out with a slotted spoon and put them just in a bowl ready for later, and then add the chicken to the stock with the bay leaf and the thyme, bring it to a gentle simmer and turn that for let that cook for 5 minutes, just till the chicken's sort of lost its pink, and then take the chicken out with a slotted spoon and put that to one side and pour the stock into a jug again for later. You're now going to get some butter in the pan and fry the bacon. So fry that until it's going nice and got a nice colour on it and a bit crispy. Take that out the pan and put that to one side in a bowl. Put it in a bowl with some kitchen towel, and it will just, the fat will drain into the kitchen towel then, so you don't have that going back in when we're ready to add it. Melt some more butter in the pan. When the butter's melted, add the button mushrooms and stir fry those for about 5 or 6 minutes. Once they're cooked through and soft, the mushrooms, pour in the sherry, turn the heat up, bubble that till it's reduced. Add the bacon back in the pan, add the onions back in the pan, and pour in the reserve stock, but don't pour it all in. Leave a little bit in your, leave sort of 15-20ml in your bowl to add later if we need it. Let that stock boil down till it's about half of what you poured in, and then get your cream and pour that in and stir it, and let the cream and stock mixture with the mushrooms baking in until it's sort of a thick creamy texture. So let it again boil down by about a third until it's a nice sort of, you know, thick creamy pie scent. You'll see what I mean by when you're doing it, almost sort of pie gravy texture. Then add the chopped herbs and set that to just leave it to one side for the minute. So just chop the herbs in, add them, leave it to one side. Get your pastry. You can buy the flat puff pastry sheets, cut them into whatever shapes you want for the top of a pie. So you can cut ovals, you can cut circles, you can cut squares for however many people you're feeding. This will serve four. Chop an egg, break an egg into a cup, mix that up with a little bit of milk, and just glaze the pastry. So just put, if you want to put some score marks down it, and glaze the pastry. Pop that in the oven. That's going in for about 10 minutes on 200. While that is in the oven, get your sauce with your cream and mushrooms and everything in, back on the hob, turn it on, heat it gently, add the chicken back to it once it's up to a heat, add the chicken and let the chicken cook through. So give it another 5 or 6 minutes while the pastry's cooking, have the chicken cooking through in the pan. When it's ready, out the pan, onto plates, get your pastry tops, put them on top, serve that with some little baby roast potatoes, some peas, green beans, a bit of cabbage if you like it. Absolutely beautiful. It is a lovely, rich, creamy chicken pie. It's the exact recipe that Gordon used in Claridge's. Genuinely, we have it loads of times. It's a great thing for dinner parties if you have people over, because you can just make a load of the filling and then you've just got to do the pastry tops. You can make in advance. So Claridge's chicken pie, a good old English recipe on this St. George's Day. Right, I'm going to pass over now to the interview with Kelly Kelly. So I hope you all enjoy that. And then I will be back at the end and we'll do the jokes, the facts and the stat of the day.
Right, we're joined now by Kelly Kelly, Kevin Kelly's husband. Kevin Kelly's wife, sorry. Blimey hell. I've known Kevin for about a year, met him through Paul. I've met you once, Kelly. Thank you very much for coming on. Really appreciate it. And it's a first for us because I've never, ever spoken to an FTS punter's other half in any way, shape or form to get what they think about it, their views on betting in general. So I'm quite intrigued by all this, and I'm sure we'll share a few stories of Kevin. But I've got to start. I apologise. With Kelly Kelly, what were you doing?
Yeah, I know. It's been a kind of long-standing joke for however, nearly 25 years that we've been together. But, yeah, unfortunately, it is true.
You didn't think I'm going to keep my own name at any stage?
No.
You never laid there saying to yourself, I'm going to be Kelly Kelly. I can't let that happen.
It was actually quite funny because I found out about it on the night that we met. So we did meet in a nightclub in Ilford, which I'm not going to name. And to cut a long story short, we didn't actually talk properly until I was actually about to leave. And he came up and said, you know, where are you going? We didn't have the talk we were supposed to be having. We'd been having a little bit of banter all evening. And I said, well, I'm going now. And he said, well, let me have your telephone number. So I did. And he said, what's your name? So I said, Kelly. And he thought that was highly hilarious. And he said, my name's Kevin Kelly. Wouldn't it be funny if we ever got married? Ha, ha, ha. And then literally 4 years later, we're getting married. So I always knew it was on the cards, but I know I made it very clear from the word go that, come on, can't really be called Kelly Kelly. It's not going to happen. I think I was a little bit upset at first that I wasn't going to take the name, but I think in the end, common sense prevailed, but it has been a long-standing joke, Kelly Kelly. So good they named her twice. Everyone brings it up. It's really actually quite funny because we sometimes change it to our advantage. If we're in any situation, if we're in estate agents, if we're in mortgage or banks or anywhere where we're together and we have to, or even on our own and we have to give our names, you give your husband's name, so Kevin Kelly. I give my name, Kelly Reed. And you can see people, they go to write and then they actually stop.
It triggers, yeah.
And you can see them, you can see the cogs working, thinking, did I hear that right? And they sometimes ask, are you sure? Did I make a mistake? And I said, no, but I always have to say I didn't change my name. So, no, I do keep my maiden name.
Yeah.
Sensibly.
Right. Obviously, I met Kevin through Paul. Kevin, they've worked together for years, good friends. I didn't even know Kevin did match betting when I met him.
Yeah.
But obviously I met him last May. He came to the seminar. I'd exchanged some banter with him as a West Ham fan, which we'll get on to later. He seems, and I can only speak from what I know, very driven to make this work, to become successful at it, do it well. I've seen some of what he does match betting, and he's very conscientious, disciplined with it.
Yeah.
What's your view on it, on the whole thing of him trying to do this and turn it into a career from what he does now?
I'm really, really pleased he's doing it, and I'm very proud of him that he's doing it. And, you know, I saw him do it, as you say, he's been doing what I now know as match betting, because I think throughout this whole process, I had to educate myself as well, because I wanted to understand, didn't really understand anything about it at the start. So he was doing that for 3 years, and, you know, when he first said that he was going to be doing that, I think I did have a few fears about it, because I'm not really involved in that world at all. Mm. Apart from the odd time we might bet on something big. So I did have some fears, because I think I equated it at the beginning with just betting. I didn't understand it.
Yeah.
And I think that initially flagged up some concerns, I think, from even from Kevin himself, from both of us, because I don't think Kevin's probably ever told you this, and I have been given permission that I can say it, but in his family there was someone that was a compulsive gambler, and he didn't have a very good growing up in that environment. It caused huge amounts of problems, and stayed with him. So I was a little bit wary at the start, but that kind of went away when I understood that that particular thing was pretty risk-free, and it wasn't actually betting in the sort of true sense of the word. And I also sort of trusted Kevin. Like you say, he's quite a trustworthy person. I knew that because of his background and how he grew up, he would never do something that was particularly silly. Mm. So I had sort of been with him through that process for 3 years, and I think, in my limited knowledge of it, I think he was pretty successful at it. You know,
he must have done well, yeah.
He made quite a bit of money, which was fantastic. I think it has changed. I think he's done really well. I think it's changed him as a person. I've certainly seen from the time that he did that seminar with you that he went on, I think his whole mindset and his whole attitude has changed completely. I think he's become more positive. He's much more motivated. I think particularly the last 5 years of his work has put him in a pretty negative place.
Yeah.
And he wants to get out of that, and he wants to do something different. And he'd been saying that for a long time, that he wanted to make changes and to do something and better himself and get us some more money so that we can do the things that we want to do. So yeah, I think you're right. I think, you know, he's become much more of a positive person.
Mm, brilliant. And when you sort of comes home, he says, I'm going to do match betting. And you said you wanted to understand it. Did you do any of it? Have you sat with him and said, this is what you do? Or and would you be able to do it yourself now? Would you know what it is?
Yeah, no, because maths and numbers, believe it or not, is not my strong point. I don't think personally I'd be able to do it. But what I think from my perspective, a key to being okay with it was to understand it.
Yeah.
I think I definitely spent some time with him, and I asked off my own back, like when he's sitting doing the trading, particularly recently, I do try to understand. Yeah. I have sat with him and he showed me how you do it. I've seen Betfair. He showed me all around that and explained. I didn't even understand, to be fair, what that was. I couldn't understand this whole idea that you're laying things.
Yeah. I
didn't get that at all. But he has explained that to me. I think I understand enough now to know what he's doing and how it works. I don't know. I think at the moment, I don't think I could do it myself, but I have mentioned him to a couple of times because, you know, sometimes when you've got plans and sometimes he can't be there and he might miss things, or he's worried he might miss things. Yeah. I have mentioned to him and said, oh, do you want to teach me how to do it so I can do it if you can't? But I think he's a bit wary about letting me do that.
Well, we'll move to that, because I think that's a good thing. I do genuinely think that's when my daughter, despite all her aggravations at home and the numerous stories, when she was at home, I did teach her to do it for that reason. She quite enjoyed it.
Yeah,
probably because she was doing it with my money and didn't have the risk of her own money. But she actually enjoyed the process of learning it and doing it. And
I think it's great. I mean, I know you two as a couple, from what I know, you are absolutely strong as a rock. And Sam and I are very similar. We have a great understanding, talk about everything. There's nothing hidden. And I think in the world we're in, particularly fast forward, Kevin, in a few years, hopefully making a lot of money doing this, it is important to, for you to understand it. And one of the words you used in the notes that Kev sent me and you sent me is the role of partner and supporting.
Yeah.
And I think that's the key bit for you. He'll have some great times over the next couple of years, but he will also have some flat spots, and he'll have some periods where the money's going down. You don't really know till you're going through that, particularly if stakes go up, how it'll affect you. You know, you don't know if, when you might sit at home now and lose 50 quid and think it's the end of the world. You fast forward 3 years and that 50 quid you're gambling in, let's say £200 stakes, and it might be a grand he loses in a day. It affects you differently. And the one thing I do when I come downstairs from trading, Sam has never got a clue whether I've won or lost. She doesn't go, oh, what amount was it? What amount was it? She might be able to tell, you know, I might be a bit quieter, or I might be doing a cartwheel if there's a late goal. But that word support and understanding it, I think, is so important for people who want to be successful at it. I think if you're trying to sneak around in the ditches and do it and keep it quiet and, oh, I lost a few quid, I don't want to tell Kelly today. I think that makes it really hard.
I think the support is so important. And I think because obviously this involves money as well, I think I agree with exactly what you said. I think, you know, it really does help if you've got the kind of relationship like me and Kevin, you know, we are, I would say exactly what you say, we are very much together, and we've always actually been able to talk about money easily. I know some people can't talk about money if you're in a relationship, but that's never been something that we've not been able to talk about. And I think when you're going into this, because there is a risk and you've got to have money, and, you know, for us, we were using some of our savings, I think you have to be upfront and say, this is what we're doing with the money. You both have to know the risk. You both have to know, because it's your money.
Yeah.
Some people might not work like that. Some people in relationship might have separate. But if you've got joint finances, I think you've got to be in on it, and you've got to be supportive of it, because you've got to know, like you said, it's okay when it's winning, but when it's not and it's gone, or some of it's gone, if you don't know, then that's being, you know, it needs to be open. But it's also the time as well. There's so many times when I've had to get used to Kevin being focused for hours and hours, sometimes whole days, where he has to concentrate. And, you know, that's time away from us.
Yeah.
So you have to be supportive of that, I think.
Mm.
And also, it's like you said about the winning, which comes into the flying iPad, which you might want to talk about at the end. But it's being there for them when it's going well. But when it hits those periods where it's not, you've got to be, that's where you come in as a sportive, because you could influence it. Because we do sort of, I think hopefully most of the time, we do take each other's advice. If it was going, you know, not wrong, but if there was a losing run, I could have quite easily come in and said, oh, this is not working. Don't do it anymore.
Mm.
And Kevin would actually say, oh, I'll do what you say then. Yeah. I can influence him. So it's really important. You've got to be on board and say, no, keep going.
Yeah, that is exactly it, I think.
Do what he tells you to do. This is what he's explained. There will be times like this. You've got to be supportive, because it can influence whether someone stops or not.
I totally agree. I've had some shocking days. I mean, I lost 20 grand in October, I think it was, September, October. If I came down and then Sam was going, oh, you got to knock this on the head, this is ridiculous. Yeah. Like you say, I mean, I do generally, I get up on a Sunday, and this is where, you know, I've talked to Kevin about goal setting and wanting to get him to that it's just a process. And you get up on Sunday, having lost Saturday, you do the same thing. It's quite repetitive. And if you keep repeating it, you'll be fine. But if Sam was in my ear saying, oh, listen, you can't keep on like this. Exactly. I get up on the Sunday with those words in my ears, thinking she's not happy down there with me. No, you are dead right. And you've got one boy?
Yeah, we've got one son, Ethan. He's just 18.
Just 18. So he's sort of flying on his own at the minute and
finding
his own way in the world. Great. what's your long-term goals for it? I've spoken a lot with Kevin about goals and trying to get him to think
get his expectations in line and get his goals, you know, sort of get him thinking about what does he actually want out of it, rather than just seeing a, oh, I can do this and make money. Actually, life goals, everything, putting it all in one package. I've had that conversation with him. What's your goals for it all?
My goals for it? Well, I think you've done a marvellous job with Kevin in terms of getting him to think about goals and how you achieve things. And it's those small steps that make up the big, that get you to the big goals, and breaking it down. Because, I mean, we were both in quite a negative place about 4 or 5 years ago, and you've done what I couldn't achieve, because I was in a job that I didn't particularly want to be in anymore. I wanted a career change, and I couldn't see a way out of it, and I was very negative. And all the research that I did showed me that the only way to get out of it was to educate myself. So I had to go back and upgrade my qualification to a degree, and it just seemed this huge, sometimes at some point, waste of time that I was going to have to spend the next 2 years working really hard, also paying half the money towards a financial course, just to achieve something that I'm no guarantees of achieving. But I did it. But even that, and once I got my degree, I actually got a new job. So I think that spurred him on a little bit, but it still didn't get him to do the goals. But you did manage to achieve that with the goal work that you're doing with him now, because he's doing it. But my goals for this is, some of them are for me, but some of them are for Kevin. I've seen how negative and how upset he's been about work and how down he gets about work. I want us to have less stress in life and not less worry. So I think one of the goals definitely for doing this is for Kevin to be less stressed and for Kevin to have a better work-life balance.
Yeah.
Do something that he enjoys doing and achieve something that is just him on his own. So that's one goal. Obviously, there's a lifestyle goal. So we want to be able to pay off some debts. We want to be able to travel. We want to be able to do all the things that you want to do without worrying, sort of long-term future as well. He would say a goal for me is I want more time to be able to write, because that's what I want to do. I want to write my book. And that's one of the things that he wants me to have more time. So he sees this as a way, and I see this as a way of maybe getting a better work-life balance so that I can work less and do more of what I really enjoy doing.
So would you give up work? If Kevin, let's fast forward 2 years, and Kevin's earning comparable better money than he's earning now.
Yeah.
And I know, I mean, I speak to Paul about the job, that one of the horrible things about their job is not really knowing what you're going to earn.
Exactly.
And that is
uncertainty.
You know, I'll deal with people who say I earn £200 a week and I want something better, but they do earn £200 a week. To actually go and sit in a line and you might only earn 50 quid or you might earn 20 quid.
Yeah.
I mean, I can imagine that must eat away at you.
Breaking.
Yeah, I couldn't do it, and I admire them for doing it.
Yeah. And but, I'm the one that sits on the end of those calls.
Yeah.
When he phones me up and says it's like 4 or 5 p.m., he's been out, or sometimes even 8 p.m. at night, and he's been out since 8 or 9 that morning, and I say, how much have you earned? And he says, £20.
Yeah.
And it's soul-destroying, because what can I say to
that? That's exactly it. It's really
frustrating, but...
But would you give up work? If you fast forward, you'd give it up completely?
Oh, yes. I have to be honest and say I would give up work.
And can we ask what the book's going to be about?
Well, I'm writing it now, and I've been writing it for a good few years, but it's that whole thing of having the time and the headspace to really focus on it. It's a fiction novel, fantasy fiction novel.
Good, because one of my goals is to write a book, and I've never started. So it is one of my goals is to write a book.
Yeah.
I've got 2 or 3 book ideas in my life. In my head, and I've never actually sat down and said that's what I'm going to do, and it is something I want to do. And any fears, any real fears about it?
No, I don't have any. I don't really have, apart from, it's not necessarily a fear, but I just because again there is a, it's not guaranteed. I know it's got what. Work hard and things go up as they go down, you lose as well as you win. My concern is, I hope for all the hard work he's putting in, and I'm sure it will, but I suppose it's just that fear of what if it doesn't happen, what if we don't get there to that point. But all my fears about it went away when I understood more about what it is and how it works. I think a lot of my fears went away once we'd met yourself. I'll be honest and say.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it isn't a sort of a loving. I think you're a cracking couple. I love him. I've only known him for a short period of time. He's a cracking lad, absolute. And I mean that, absolute. He's got a great, great nature about him. I like people who accept having the piss ripped out of them quite. And he's one of them.
Yeah, he's quite like that. He's
got a subtle way of coming back on his own at times. Might take him a while to get there, but he does eventually.
Scared about me being on this, actually.
I know. Well, we're gonna get to this in a minute. We've got a couple of stories for the guy. But I just think you're a cracking cut. I will tell you that I'm going to do all I can to get him to where he wants to be. But he's got to do it. And to be fair, he has been doing. Whenever I've spoke to him. I think even this period where I've been able to speak to him a bit more through this lockdown, I think he has enjoyed it in a little way and kept him down.
It's opened up a whole new world for him because I think he'd be happy for me to say, because I have to think about the list of things he's told me that I can and can't say, which I'm actually ignoring. And he's told me not to waffle as well. Apparently, you have to cut things.
Whatever you like, ignore what it's
concise. I'm not concise. I do waffle. It's my job to waffle. I'm very good at it. But it's opened up a whole new world to him, really, because he would be the first one to admit that he doesn't have a huge circle of friends, doesn't trust many people. In fact, he doesn't trust very few people, you know, in life. And what this has done, as well as sort of give all the motivation and actually physically doing something, it's opened up a whole new social world to him. So he's made lots of friends, like yourself. Carter, as you know, is a good friend. And obviously you knew Paul very well from before. But I have to mention Gary, because I know you mentioned
him with Gary, yeah.
And some others. But it's also the social side of it has opened up for him. But also it's the social media side, because he was never on anything like Facebook, hated Facebook. Twitter has opened up a whole new world where he can take the mick out of people and do all that. Yeah. And stuff and get involved, and I've just seen him, he's so much happier.
That's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I'm going to move away from the punting into a bit more about some stories in your life, but I've got to come to the football team first.
Right.
Okay. Were you a West Ham fan before you met him?
Well, I have to be honest and say that out of the two of us, it's actually me that's actually the bigger fan.
Really?
Yes, I was actually going to West Ham Upton Park as a child long before he was, because I'm from Stratford, so my family are huge West Ham fans, and I was actually going longer than he was.
Right, so when you met him, was he a West Ham fan? I'd love you to say no. I'd love you.
Unfortunately, there was a little bit of a, because football has always been a big, because I'm... I don't have any brothers and sisters. So because football is a huge part of my dad's life and the men in my family and my mum's life as well, mum's a huge West Ham fan, I kind of learned to play football. So I grew up playing football, going to football, watching football on the television, going to matches when I was old enough. I've come from the area, so they brought the FA Cup that many years ago when we won it, and we haven't won it since.
Black and white TV, Kelly.
We lifted it and we had pictures with it. So there was a little bit of, on our first day, a little bit of, you know, when the subject of, he said, do you like football? And there was a little bit of silence because you could see it. We looked at each other and think, please, you come. And I knew that he came from East Ham, Barking Road, and he knew I came from Stratford, so it should have been West Ham. We knew that it was likely we would be West Ham fans, but there was a little bit of a moment when I looked and thought, he's going to have to support West Ham, otherwise this is not going to go anywhere. But luckily, I said, who do you support? And he went, oh, West Ham, definitely. I said, yeah, I'm West Ham fan. Huge relief, and then we could move on.
But
it's a huge part of our life, and he probably not told you, but we got engaged on West Ham football ground as well.
Oh, I didn't know that. No.
I didn't know that. He proposed on West Ham football ground before a match. It was not empty. It was empty. It wasn't full, sorry. He'd arranged it beforehand. We were going to the match and he'd done all this organising and we got to go in before the match and took me to the centre.
Oh, romantic. Look at that. Wow.
Lucky you, I'd be okay with that.
Flippy and heck almighty. Fair play to him.
Yeah.
And you say you got some stories. I've been told to ask about one.
Go on then.
So I've got to start there. His good mate, Paul, he let it drop in a conversation we had the other day, but he's texted me and said, don't forget to ask about the flying iPad. What is the flying iPad?
Now, Kevin is usually, this is all goes back again to what I can and can't say, but I'm going to say it anyway. He's very good when things are not with the trading and everything. He's really, 99.9% of the time, he's really good with it when things are not going so well. But there was a particular occasion, this is probably towards the end of last year, where with the trading, he was on a run where it just kept going worse and worse and worse, and it wasn't picking up. And then I don't quite know exactly what happened, but he was waiting for some kind of goal to happen or not happen. I can't even remember. But it happened in the last minute. I don't know. Something went wrong. And I was sitting there and all I saw was this iPad just come flying across the room from one chair. Luckily, he did throw it towards the other chair so it didn't land on the floor. But it came across with the force of a hurricane. This flying iPad just came from me and it was swearing and, oh my God, this is... And that was when I had to go, it's okay, remember what Ian said to you, don't worry. But it can be a bit like that. Kevin's very quiet and very... you don't think he's quite an angry person or aggressive person, but he's one of these people that's quiet, 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 and then something happens and he blows up.
Well, I can only say I've played golf with him twice, and I know of one other time, and he's broken a club two out of those three times.
Things break.
Yeah.
He's fine. But 99% of the time, he's fine, and then something will happen, he just snaps, and it's all or nothing. So things break.
That's
the flying iPad.
We'll get that out of him with the trading. And so you must have 20-odd years of marriage. Is it 20 or 30-odd years?
We've been married, 22 years. So we've been together 25, just over.
All right, so a similar sort of time here, Sam. So you must have a load of stories. Give us a couple of your best ones.
Oh, I was asking him about this again. It's the ones I can say and ones I can't say.
Don't worry to forget it. We'll deal with him afterwards.
This is the one this is the story. Well, it's kind of a collection of stories. You probably have seen this already, I think, but we were laughing about this last night and hysterical that Kevin falls over a lot.
Yes, he does.
Have you noticed that?
Yes.
Have you witnessed it?
I witnessed it on the golf course.
This is a thing over the 20 years that I've noticed. Now, there's nothing wrong. He's been doing it for that long, so it can't be anything that's wrong with him. But he does things that most people would think, if I do that, I'm going to fall or something's going to happen. But he just does them. So I was thinking, and I've actually thought, yeah, over the years, you've fallen over so many times. So there was the time when in our old house where Ethan was very little, we had a baby gate between the doors. And for some reason, he thought he could come from the kitchen and vault the baby gate and get over, especially after a few drinks this was. So it wasn't the best, sensible thing to do or judgment. But rather than vaulting it, he didn't even get off the ground. He just crashed into it, but took half the door frame down with it. Just crashed through it. Didn't even jump. Just crashed through it. There was another time. These were the good ones, the public ones, when it's in the street. So one time, many, many years ago, when we was in his old house, parents' house, we'd gone to work in the morning at Plaistow Station. Big left set of stairs to get down to the platform. Running for the train. We're always late or on, time pressured. He decided to get to halfway down and vault five or six steps. Literally vault them, jump them onto the platform. And he did, and he caught his foot on the bottom step, went flying face forward, but rather than face planting, he actually did a forward roll.
Right.
Full suit and everything. And it looked like he took a forward roll and actually got up and just looked back to see where I was, as if to say, and everyone was just, it looked like something out of a action film.
He styled it out.
It looked like a stunt. And then there was the other time when he was, Paul might have actually been there for this one, I'm not sure, but this is probably on some CCTV, someone had a laugh somewhere. The middle of Upper Street in Islington, somewhere like that, Islington High Road. He decided he could try and vault the central reservation thing, the barrier, and he got over it, but obviously landed on his bum on the floor, completely sprayed out. Everyone saw it, and some little old lady came up to him and said, "Are you okay?" And he was like, "I'm fine."
We're going to have to rename him Mr. Bump. That's it.
But I know he told me he fell over when he was on the golf course.
He did, yeah. First time we played, he fell over. Yeah, we played at the Wilney. One minute he was there, next minute he wasn't. He fell in the bunker.
Kevin just falls over randomly. He's falling down the stairs. He just falls over randomly whenever, I don't know. There's results.
And anything else? Anything else you'd like to talk about? Anything you'd like to ask me? Anything you'd like to... Anything at all? The floor is yours. The
floor is mine. I think I would... Personally, what I would like to say is I just want to say a big thank you to you. Because you've actually... I would say, if it sounds a bit dramatic, that you have changed our lives. I think you have. And I think... I wanted to say thank you for that. You did a podcast quite a while ago, very soon on in sort of when Kevin first met you. And it was probably before the seminar that you did.
Yeah.
And it was the one where, you'll remember this when I say, it's the one where you talked about your family and your upbringing, your relationship with your dad and everything.
Yeah.
And I remember Kevin listened to that and it really, really resonated with him. And I remember he actually said to me, "I want you to listen to this." And he made me listen to it because he knew that it would resonate with me as well, because there's very many similarities with your story to both of ours.
Right.
Yeah. Relationships in that area, they're not great.
Yeah.
And my God, it really, I actually cried. I'll be honest, I'm not being dramatic. I cried when I heard that because it really resonated with me. And that was kind of the moment when, I don't know, things started to change for us because we heard your story. So I just want to say a big thank you to you for giving Kevin and me this opportunity to sort of, you know, do something. And
you're more than welcome. As I said, you're both cracking people. I mean, when I met you in that pub in London, I can't remember your exact words, but you put, "I can handle someone like you." And I just thought, that's it. That's brilliant. Because I do. I life's for living for me. I like to see people. I like people to have a good time and have fun. That's what I like, because I think life is for living. And anybody that I can help do that and not live their life for them, but help them just have more fun in their life and live it. Because my childhood, I mean, it was crap. I look back and, you know, you've got a boy. My overriding thought when I met Sam and kids was, I'm not going to let them have the childhood I had. I want them to have a good time. I want them to look back and enjoy life. And all that last year with Jack, it wasn't that really he was having the mental issues that was bothering me. It was the fact he just wasn't enjoying life. You know, you're at uni, you've been at Cambridge, the greatest uni in the world, one of them, and you're not enjoying it. And I just, that's the bit that you particularly when kids are involved, you want to do it for them. You want to, I want you to enjoy this.
Something, Kevin, from the stuff about goals that you've been working with him on and making goals, he showed me that list and there was something on there that he put that I actually disagreed with. I just wanted to, I'm not being dramatic, but I'm going to use it as an opportunity to say it to him, that he actually put as a goal to be proud of himself. And I actually said to him, "Are you not proud of yourself, of what you've achieved in your..." He went, "No, I'm not proud of myself." And I actually fundamentally disagree with that. He should be proud of himself because of exactly what you just said there, that, you know, the way that we had our upbringings, when we had kids, we decided we were not going to do the same mistakes and we were not going to have the childhoods that we had. And he's an absolutely amazing dad.
Yeah.
And I couldn't have asked for a better father for my child. Right. And he's got a fantastic relationship with Ethan. And he worked really hard in a job that he really detests.
Mm.
Really grinds him down, but he always works hard, keeps us afloat, brings in the money, supports me, and I think he should be proud of himself.
I agree with you totally.
I
think people underestimate marriage. I think in this day and age, to be married for 20, 30 years, you've probably gone through hard times, we've gone through hard times, and you work your way through it. To bring kids up in
everything that's going on around. Exactly, he should be proud of himself. And he's a cracking, cracking guy.
Yeah.
And I don't mind saying it. And you are a cracking, cracking girl. And
I feel the same about you, Ian.
And I cannot thank you enough for coming on. It's very, very unlike me to praise West Ham fans, but I will make a exception for you. I would love to see that stadium in the Championship, I'm not going to lie. but I do really thank you for coming on. It is great for me just to listen to the perspective, as I say, of somebody not doing it, but on the other side of it, having to live with it. So I can't thank you enough. I'm sure when this lockdown is over, we'll meet up sometime and have a drink.
I'm going to hold off for waffling. You'll say, you've waffled too much. You've said too much. You've gone off.
I waffle on that podcast all day. Don't worry about it.
Oh, my God. Could you imagine if I had a podcast? This might be my new thing.
Once we get you the side, you've given up work, you've written the novels, then you can have a podcast talking about what you like.
I've missed my calling.
Yeah, that's it.
I'm the type of person, I don't want to do karaoke, but if you give me the microphone, that's it. I'm there all night.
Right.
Give me a stage. I'll keep talking.
Well, what we will do, because obviously my plan, I mean, we need football to restart, but when we've got Kevin going on the football, in a year or so's time, we'll have a revisit and see how things are going. So we'll get you on again and do that. But I will, I thank you very much for coming on. And I'll catch up with you soon.
Thank you. Right,
cheers, Kelly. Thanks. Bye. Bye.
Well, I hope you found that interesting. I certainly enjoyed talking to Kelly. I think it is a massive factor. I said, the very first seminar I did, I said, if you try and do this in the shadows, it's very difficult. You do have to be up front and talk to people. There is a stigma to gambling. There's a lot of people who don't understand it. Kelly talked there about not understanding the backing and laying side. My boy went to Cambridge. Very, very intelligent guy. He's never really understood the idea of laying. I've sat down with him numerous times and gone through it. He's more an academic writing wise and history and stuff like that. Numbers, he found the whole concept of it quite difficult. So it is a difficult thing to understand and explain to people. And I think when you're doing it, you take it for granted. But the key element is the support element. If you have a bad day, don't throw iPads around. We'll be working on that, Kev. It is a matter of being able to talk to somebody and just get it off your chest and move on. Sam and I don't really talk about gambling. I don't come down from my office on a trading day. She has no idea whether I've won or lost because I try to compartmentalise that side of it. She's obviously not stupid and she knows my body language, being with me 20-odd years, so she'll have half an idea. And there's times when you've had a late winner when you're skipping and walking on air. Times like I said when I lost 20 grand when the last thing I want to do is sit and talk about it. But it is that if somebody's in your ear telling you, oh, don't do that, then it gives you doubts. And Sam's very well aware of that with me, and Kelly obviously is with Kevin. Just to have that support network is so important. So those of you, again, looking to do this full time, that is something to really think about, talk about, involve your family. Irrespective of their view on gambling, you know, you don't have to try and convince them that gambling's this all wondrous pastime, but what you do need to convince them is, I'm doing this and I'd like you to support me, and if you're not going to support me, then just shut up altogether, because you don't need people chipping away in your ear. But thanks ever so much, Kelly. No, thank you ever so much. And let's see that stadium in the Championship. Right, let's move on. Facts of the day. This is a good one for you foodies. If you eat an apple, a potato and an onion, if you eat them with your nose plugged, they all taste exactly the same. There you go, try that. Get a raw apple, onion, potato. Try that. Yeah, big people running. He's talking shit there in these normal times. Normal. Absolute bellins. I had another one. Where's the other one? Well, I found when I was looking at this, did you know Mike Tyson once offered a zoo attendant $10,000 to let him fight a gorilla? He's not right, is he? He is not right in the head, that boy. But that is true. He apparently offered $10,000 to fight a gorilla. But this one's interesting. In 2011, more than one in three divorce filings in the US contained the word Facebook. And there you go. I've told you it's a cancer, and it's only got worse since then. One in three, over 30% divorce filings contained the word Facebook. That shows you that Zuckerberg is laughing at you all, rubbing his hands, billionaire, while absolutely destroying people. Absolute fucking cancer of a site. We've been doing some of this training and asking people, how would you like to interact? And one of the options was Facebook. And I just breathe a sigh of relief when people go, no, I haven't got Facebook. I absolutely love the fact that we're not using it, I'll be honest. But Dave won't like me saying that. Sorry, Dave. Right, what's next? I'm going to give you a very simple stat of the day here. In the over 2.5 market in Scandinavia, Scandinavia exclusive, Denmark, Norway and Sweden. If the home favourite's between 2 and 2.5 and the over 2.5 is between 2 and 2.5, you make a profit. There you go. Bottom line is, don't chase odds on favourites in Scandinavia and odds on under over 2.5s. Look a bit bigger than that. 2 to 2.5, both markets, you make a profit in both markets. There you are, just another way of looking at things. Look at prices, look at how match odds prices affect 2.5 goal prices, things like that. Simple. I said stat of the day. I think people want me to give them a system a day. I don't know what you think I am here. That is a stat of the day. It's a stat. I've given you a stat. Done the recipe, done the book, done the jokes. No, I haven't done the jokes, have I? Oh, here we go. It's actually draining me now, some of these jokes coming out. Right, where are they? Let's find them. I've got flipping tons of them here. I mean, Andy, he wants me to, greatest respect, Andy, he wants me to do a joke. He sent me, it's like War and Peace here, son. I can't do that one today, Andy, it's too long. It is too long, that one. Hang on, I've got one here. I'm doing one short one, which I've got sent. I like the topical ones, I like these. I like old Curly sending me these. These are short and topical. Branson talks about wanting £1 million bailout with all this business. It's verging on the ridiculous. I like it. Good, see? Quick, snappy, like me. Quick and snappy. Well done, Curly. Straight in, son. You're actually moving to the top of the joke charts. You've sent me two that I've laughed at. Andy, when I'm doing a shorter pod, I will do your War and Peace efforts. Fair play to your son for typing them out. We'll get to them. I know you're desperate to get... Everybody wants to get on the pod. I've got the best pods. We've got all the best pods. I think that's it. I think I've done. I think we've done the joke. We've done the recipe. We've done books. We've had a rant about people normal. Done the facts. And we've done the interview with Kelly Kelly. Right, thank you ever so much, as always, for listening, guys. I hope it's added something to your day. 54 minutes today of informed discussion with Kelly and then a load of old nonsense. But have a lovely day in these abnormal fucking times and understand that. We will get through it. We will get through this. Just keep going. Push on. Positivity. Come on. And I'll be back with you tomorrow. It's Sing Along a Friday, isn't it? Have a lovely St. George's Day, and I'll speak to you in the morning.